Just keep that in mind as you're using that time. It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker. Jim, actually, here from Visalia. I first met at this meeting, I think it was, probably close to 17 years ago. Jim was in service to this Sunday 3 p.m. Serenity Seekers group, and it's a great pleasure to introduce our friend Jim.
Thanks, Bill. Hello, everyone. My name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic. I'm happy to be back to the Sunday evening Serenity Seekers. It was a big part of my second time around in AA, and I'm happy to be here and to tell you a little bit about myself and what it was like growing up and what happened along the way and what changed me and what I'm doing now to maintain my sobriety. In a small town not far from here, I grew up in a household that always used alcohol as a lubricant when entertaining, or pretty much on a daily basis for that matter. That didn't include my sister and I, who joined this family when we were 5 and 6 years old. It's funny because she's on this Zoom right now, and she told me, and I didn't know this, but she said when she was 6 years old, she could make a double martini for our, eventually became our adopted father. There was a beer keg in the fridge in the garage, and whether it was a bridge party or just a gathering of my mom and her friends, and there was a lot of lubrication going on all the time. And so really not drinking never occurred to me, because from what I saw as a young person, drinking meant fun, you know, and it meant having a good time. There were a few times when people of different political views would have some heated arguments during a bridge game or something, but most of the time it was fun, and I guess everyone made it home okay most of the time, you know. So I started, my cousin was getting married, and there was white wine and red wine, and I was 12 years old, and so I mixed the white wine and the red wine, and I like to say when I give a talk that my drinking career started with incomprehensible demoralization when I was 12, because I had to pull my retainer out of the vomit from behind the Tarabella Memorial Building grass out there where I was and getting my introduction to drinking 101, you know, and I didn't become alcoholic on that day, I don't think. I don't know. Maybe I was born one. I remembered that feeling that it gave me, and it was something that I would begin to search for in a few years with more regularity. In high school, pretty much probably the summer after my sophomore year, it really escalated. But even then, it was just weekends. I was in the band, so there I could do what my friends were doing at football games and stuff. And we got pulled over a lot. And it always seemed that there were no consequences. No matter what happened, there were really never any consequences. So I didn't really learn at an early age that what I was doing was wrong. I knew it was fun. And I knew it enabled me to talk to girls at dances and to dance with them and ask them on dates and things like that. But I never really, understood what alcohol was doing to me, even at a young age. I began then to drink with impunity, thinking that what I was doing was okay, because everywhere I looked, even when I had an open beer and a six pack at my side, and I was 18 years old because there was always a store out in the country that you could buy beer at. And the CHP pulled me over and he poured one beer out and he said, make sure you're inside when you drink the rest of them. That's the message I got throughout my childhood, and early, adulthood, that it's okay. And so that's what I did. I also began to develop at an early age the characteristics of an alcoholic, in which I was unkind and treated people unfairly, and I was really, really mean to some very, very nice, beautiful young ladies when I was in high school. Because I guess I always thought that there would be another one, or there was always somebody that I could go back to or whatever. And I think about that now. And when I've made my amends, I didn't include some of those people. And this talk is kind of making me think about that a little bit, that I need to go back. I was rude and sometimes mean to my mom and anyone else I thought that wasn't cool. In other words, they didn't do the things that I did. I was a good musician at a very young age, and I began to have success and get a name for myself in music. When I was a senior in high school, I played a trumpet solo at a Ram 49er game. There was 104,000 people there. And my mom and my nieces and some family members were in the stands. It was really really a fun thing, and I just never got a message that what I was doing was wrong. It didn't come from the home. Our mom knew what we were doing. The stepdad wasn't really a part of the picture. He didn't really like us too much. But junior college, more of the same. I never applied for a job. Jobs were always just handed to me. I got a nice job for the local water company. And I got one of my best lessons ever on how my thinking could get me in trouble. I lived very, very close to my job, and I could get on my motorcycle. I don't think I hit third gear, and I was there in a minute. And the job started at 7, and I'd get there just a tick before 7. But everyone was already there, and they're drinking coffee and socializing. And I thought, well, this is the job that these guys are going to have forever. I'm in college, and I want to do something more than this. And the foreman called me in his office, and he asked another guy to come in. And he said, I have this other gentleman in here to keep me from beating you up right now, because you don't seem to understand that we meet at 6:40 and we drink coffee and you showing up at 7 is an insult to us. And I was never told that. It was never explained to me. But let me tell you, from the rest of the time, I was a good old boy, and I was in that group. I was showing up early. I think that that attitude carried with me into the first time I came into AA, when I thought that I really didn't belong in the same rooms with the people that I was in the rooms with. You know, I thought I was more than, I guess, not less than. So anyway, I got out of junior college and went on to university. Pretty much escalated everything with the drinking, but I was able to always able to get my studies done, and I was always able to do the things that I needed to do musically, and I really thought that everything was under control with my drinking. I graduated in 1980 in December, and in 1981 I was teaching locally at a middle school to here, and so I was like 2 weeks out of school, and I really didn't know what I was doing. My position in life had changed, but I was still going crazy outside of my professional life. I got married, And though I was a heavy drinker, I still managed to complete all of my professional obligations. This carried on for a few years, pretty much all the same. We had a daughter, and I thought that was going to get me to slow down, but nothing changed. We divorced, and that let me drink the way I wanted to with really no restrictions, unhinged. But my personality is one that I rely on another person to take care of me. And I was very reliant on my wife for that. And I immediately reached out for someone else. And less than 6 months after my divorce was final, I was married again. We bought a house together. We had two sons and the family was growing, and I had someone to take care of me. But I inside was the same, and I had the same habits. I was mean, self-centered, and drunk a lot. I began to feel distant to people that I should have been the closest with, my own family members. I didn't help with the homework. I took a job farther away from home, and I was missing from many of my kids' activities and distancing myself from my family. The problem with the way I saw it was, I'm important, I'm doing this job that's more important now, and you guys have to understand that, that this is who I am, don't you see who I am? And it takes me back to an AA talk when I think it was a Navy, young Navy, whatever their lowest rank is, he became the commander of the ship, and he had, his father was very famous in the Navy, and he said, well, don't you know who I am? And the commander said, no, who are you? And there was another talk where the guy said, don't you know who I think I am? I think that's more like, that's the way I can relate to that one. But so I was missing a lot of my stuff. It culminated in an arrest in 1992. We held a golf tournament for two of my friends that passed away. I was supposed to be with them when they went to this dinner, but I had a rehearsal that I had to get to, and I couldn't go. And on the way home, at a very high rate of speed, their car pretty much disintegrated. They were very good friends of mine and many of our school community. And so we held a golf tournament, and after that, I found out that when I thought I was fine, the policeman told me I was 2.4, and I guess that's a lot more than fine. That was my first trip to the alternative services, and I had a problem looking at myself. In other words, I didn't want to look at myself, and I avoided looking at myself. And so when they suggested that I do that, I simply gave them answers that I thought they wanted to hear. In other words, I just lied my way through that whole program. And if you know anyone that has not had success in AA, a good way to do that is to not tell the truth, especially about yourself, because that's the essence of getting it around here. At least that's been my experience. I also went to the shortest meetings I could find, which are the Alana Club, and I was describing earlier, that I didn't feel like I belonged. I had an attitude that I was judgmental, about other people in the meetings for no other reason. I know now that everyone in the meeting has the same disease, and we're all there for the same reason, regardless of anything else. Nothing else matters, whether you live under a bridge or the top of a penthouse. And so I just didn't know that at the time. And so I had a lot to learn. My music career was blossoming. I was playing principal trumpet in the local symphony. I started getting gigs with a band out of Los Angeles. They sent me to Hawaii and to Las Vegas for the 2000 New Year's, and that night was insane. Everything was free and plentiful and top notch. In fact, my sister who's on the meeting, she said, "I'm coming to that dance." And I said, "There's no way you're getting in." And I looked at about 12:15, and there she was out on the dance floor. I mean, they had dogs sniffing before the deal and everything. You know, it was crazy. But anyway, I got super hammered, and they flew us home the next day. And I got to LAX, and the next thing I remember, I was in the parking lot at Burger King in Newhall, and it was just time travel. I have no idea how I got there. And so I knew something had to change. So I tried to stop on my own. I bought a 12-pack of beer and I put it in the outside fridge. And every day I walked past it, I patted myself on the back. And all day at work, that's all I thought about was that 12-pack. And I came back and I go by it another day. I said, "Jim Grail, okay, all right, great." And I knew AA was there, and I knew it was something that would help me. And I saw the miracles in the program. I just didn't think they applied to all the stuff that they were asking people to do applied to me. I really thought I could beat alcoholism with intelligence. If I'd had a brain, I would have opened my book and saw that one of the co-founders was an MD. So on day 24, a friend of mine brought his guitar over and a six pack of Modelo, and that set me off for 2.5 more years, which led to my own version of incomprehensible demoralization. During that time, just a few years prior to that, my first wife, we had divorced, and she passed away from leukemia when our daughter was only 8 years old. And so she was brought into our family with two small brothers. I don't think they were both, one still wasn't born yet, but so we had my daughter and two boys with us in our family. So anyway, I took the boys and some friends when they were young up to Hume Lake for a camping trip, and it ended badly. And I won't go into a whole bunch of details about that, but my wife had to come up to Hume to get the kids and their friends, and I was being driven down to the Fresno County Jail. And again, I was over 0.2 on that one. And I had my first honest communication with a higher power in the back of that car, truck or whatever it was. And I didn't really pray as much as just cried out to God. In fact, I think I was talking out loud because she was making notes on anything I said. And she said, "What'd you say?" Never mind. But anyway, I just said, I've tried everything in my power to do something about this, and I am unable to do it. And so, the next day, I was released, and a friend of mine drove all the way down from Auberry to come and get me. Prather, and he took me up to Hume, and we stayed in my old trailer. And for some reason, at 2:15 the next day in the morning, I got up and had a beer, and that was the last drink I had. And that was July 15th, 2002. And from that day on, I haven't had the need to take any mind altering or substances or alcohol in that period of time. What really got me on that was I read in the book that some people's conversion is a more gradual kind. If you've read the book and Bill's story about his white light experience and all of that. When I have to think about mine, I have to think that that's kind of what it was. You know, mine was very similar to that. I had needed to drink every day, and after that, I didn't. And I think a part of it was fear, in fear of losing my family, losing my job. I did lose my license. I went to meet my pastor. I lost my license for 6 months, and he told me to go to meetings, and of course I did the alternative services thing, but I got the long sentence on this time. I think it was 9 months or something like that. But I was blessed to have two people that really changed my life, Albert G. and Don W. Albert G. is still around here. He's an inspiration to anyone that talks to him. He's lost both of his feet, but his message is one of inspiration, and his message is unbelievable. And Don W. was a retired postmaster from Farmersville, and he had these steely blue eyes, and he asked me a question across the table from me. I looked in those eyes, and I could not lie. And I started being honest about myself. And those two guys, I really give them credit. I couldn't lie. At this point in my life, I didn't have a higher power. I had no direction. And I found out later that even though I could give hugs and say I love you, I really didn't know how to love. I had lost that. I really felt like that I was almost numb to my feelings. I started some therapy with a therapist around here that is a recovered alcoholic. And I started going to meetings, and my pastor said, go to this meeting. And he said, go to the Friday night Freedom Fellowship, which is also held at our church. And so I started doing that, and I met good people in AA. One of the best things I think that could have happened to me was when I went to that first meeting at the Blue Room, and I was called on that night, and I heard myself say, hello everyone, I'm Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. And I think by saying that for the first time and hearing me say it, that kind of made it okay for to start this journey that I've been on for the last few years. And at that meeting, I met incredible people. There was a fellow named Kelly Dock, who gave me his card. And on the back of his card, it said, call anytime. And I thought, what the heck kind of an organization is this, where people I don't even know would say, call me anytime of day or night, and I'll be there for you. And it was unreal. I couldn't fathom that kind of devotion to service that I saw there. But it's freely given. And I'm learning, even now to freely give it away. So I got a sponsor, and I did what my sponsor said. I got a service position. I was in charge of the literature, and I toted around this suitcase on my mountain bike, and I kept doing more service, becoming CSR, and I began to feel better. I started working the steps at home. It was a really slow go. I wasn't a real popular guy in the household. I had to patch things up with my kids. I had to patch things up with my wife. I didn't go to a lot of my boys' games because I worked usually in the opposite direction where they had games. But my wife said, you know, you're missing your kid's childhood. And so I took that to heart. And I would sometimes drive 150 miles a day to work, to Hanford for a water polo game or a baseball game, back to work for a night practice with the marching band, and then back home. And I was so glad once I started doing that I was doing that, because those games were amazing. And I would go to some of them at home, but I always had an excuse, or I always had a gig, or I always had some place to be. But I started to make family a priority. And I was learning how to give love. And I was starting to do things for others instead of just thinking of myself. I started to be kinder to people, try to think of others first. And I still struggle with that. Yesterday I played at a Celebration of Life service in Fresno, and I was getting back off the 41 onto 99, and a guy passed me in a single lane, just kind of went around me. And I thought, let it go, you know, just let him go. No, I had to go. I had to get up next to him just to give him the look, you know. And after I did it, I thought, you idiot, you're going to talk about what a hell of a guy you are, and then you're still, that's still me though. You know, that inside, that's still who I am, and that's what I'll do, those stupid things. I was so pissed, you know, and then it was like, you know, why did I do that? And, well, I know the answer, I'm alcoholic, you know, and we want to win, and we get pissed when people, you know, we think we're wrong. I guess at least that's my experience, you know. But at least now I accept that fact that I'm an alcoholic, and I have the tools here in AA that allow me to deal with my own craziness, you know. And so I began to have some recognition professionally, and the groups did some nice things. I like to think that my sobriety has something to do with that. And the trips that I took with my band, after I got sober, we gave concerts at the Kennedy Center, at Lincoln Center, and at Carnegie Hall, and my jazz group was invited to play in the White House, and so we did some really, really, really nice things. And it's real easy for me to think that I was the only reason for that, but that wasn't it. I was the catalyst for getting those kids to play, and they did the work. But it's very, very gratifying, and it was so nice to have those things happen sober. The personal relationship with my wife began to flourish, we began to do stuff, more stuff together. We bought a trailer and started taking our kids and grandkids around to different places, and we really started loving each other in a deeper and more meaningful way than ever before. And she appreciated, and she would tell me all the time, "You're not the same person." I felt the same, I guess, but I knew that what I was doing was not the same. And so I appreciated those times and those things because she deserved that, you know. She could easily have left me, and she didn't. And I'm so thankful that I was able to help her later. And I'll talk about that in a minute. That changed. Everything changed last year in September after a week in Palm Springs on a golf trip. I noticed her stomach was descending a bit, and I told her she should go see a GI doctor. Well, she went to a regular doctor. And Kelly wasn't a big drinker or anything, but the doctor said, "Well, we think you have cirrhosis." And they sent her to a liver specialist in Fresno who agreed, but he really didn't do anything, didn't really examine her much. But anyway, he did suggest a CAT scan. And so we got that done that day and said we'd come back and get the results. And so we drove back when the results were ready, and we had two of our grandkids with us. And we stopped at the place and got the packet, and then we told them we were going to take them to ice cream. So they were all in the ice cream parlor, and I am out in our car, and I opened the packet, and I really felt like I was dying because I knew what it meant. The report said metastatic adenocarcinoma of the pancreas, ovaries, and liver, metastasized throughout the ascites, which is the liquid in the abdomen. So I knew we were looking at that they had just found that she has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. We chose to fight. She chose to fight. This began a long journey with insurances, hospitals. I immediately got on the phone to Stanford, and we got into the Stanford hospital. And I started a document that I updated daily on our successes and trials, because there were too many people that kept calling and wanting texts and everything else, and this was just a way for me to get the information out, and it really worked. Once we got into Stanford, I had a friend contact an old buddy who had an empty house in San Mateo. I hadn't seen him in 40 years, and he said, "My girlfriend will come put some food in the fridge, and meet you there and give you a key. And anytime you're up here for chemo, then you can use the house. That saved us tens of thousands of dollars, if you know what it costs to get a hotel room in the Bay Area. And that was free. Just amazing. It was God working for us. And we had done the chemo. In fact, I looked on my calendar on the computer, and a year ago today, at right about this time, because we would go in at night to take this 3-day pump off, and the appointment was at 6:35, I think. And so, right about the same time I got here, we were dealing with chemo 1 year ago tonight. In fact, we had it on Christmas Day. In about January, she really began to get weaker and weaker, and so we quit going to Stanford, and she saw Dr. Havard here in Visalia, who was a classmate of hers in high school. And that went okay, but we got to a point where the chemo was just making her so sick that we decided that we weren't going to fight it anymore. And so she went on hospice. And I really think the hospice was some of the best times we had, because those people were unbelievable. And their main mission is the pain management and good, that the patient it feels good. And we would do everything we could. I remember taking her to Costco, where I had the cart and the wheelchair in one hand and the other. And we would go on dates. We'd go to Del Taco and get fish tacos, and then drive halfway off to Hanford and watch the sunset sitting in some farmer's lot off of 198. You know, and that's all we could do. You know, and people would offer us their coastal homes, and she said, "Well, what? I can't walk on the beach. What am I gonna, you know? What am I going to do?" And it was heartbreaking. But during that entire thing, I never thought about a drink. There was always alcohol in our house. And I was able to, my son and I, he quit drinking. We were able to be there for her and do everything we could to see that she was as comfortable and as happy as she could be with this horrible situation. Some mornings I get my coffee and sit in her wheelchair next to her hospital bed, and I say, "Well, we got to write the obit," and so she helped me write it. And, "Well, we got to plan your service," so she helped me plan it. And the obituary was great. She took her last breath on August 10th. It's about 9:30 in the morning, or in the evening, and we had a wonderful service for her a few weeks later. AA is here for me, and I'm so thankful that I have the friends, acquaintances in and out of AA. Some of my best friends now are still people from kindergarten, and I'm doing all right. I pray to my higher power God all the time. I read inspirational pages. Try to do it daily. Don't always do it. Usually at least catch up by midday or the evening if I forget or am on doing something else. And I still try to think more of others, stay out of myself, and believe you me, I'm going to keep coming back to meetings. Because I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Jim.
Right on.
Thank you.
All right, so we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. So we just ask you, please limit your sharing to allow that to happen. I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Jim, and he will pick on some people to share. So there's obviously people here in our audience and people online. We generally kind of go back and forth to give everybody a chance. So,
all right. How about Christian?
Hi, everybody. My name is Christian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Christian.
I've got about 51 days today.
I know.
hit my 2 month mark on my mother's birthday, which was yesterday. I just exited from Pine. Exited from the Pine program on Friday. I've been out for 2 days now. And to be honest, it's not as weird or different as a lot of people have said it was going to be. I will admit, like, the first hour out, it was a little strange. I'm in the house with, like, 22 different dudes for 2 months. Well, sometimes at a time, 25 different guys at a time, 2 months straight. I never once took a pass, so I was there the entire time. But, the first hour out, it was a little strange. Because I got in my car and started driving. At first, it was a little strange, but then after a little bit, it all just felt the same to me. I have had, the whole time I was in Pine, I never once had any urges to drink at all. Well, actually, that's a lie. There's a couple times I did whenever, I've noticed what my triggers are. My triggers are my anger, my frustration. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple times where I did get really pissed off at some at certain situations, and I was like, man, I just had a drink right now. But I know once I take a drink, I'm like, what's going on? Yeah, nah, that's a lie, too. Like, as soon as I take a drink, cool, yeah, I'm calm for a minute. But once I keep, like, how we do it, we drink one, we just keep going. And once I keep going, the anger just builds and builds and builds, and finally to that point, it just like a volcano that top blows, and that anger just goes oozing to everyone on everything, people who don't even deserve it. So, as I've been out, as soon as I got home after my appointment with New Heights, I had an appointment with New Heights, and I got on my appointment, and I was on my way home, and I called Lee over here, just to let her know, like, hey, I'm out, we're still going to meet up at, for Surrender Seekers, and you know, meet a price like that. So her car was down, he had a jump, I'll be right there, turned around, went to go give her a jump, and I got to the corner of Cork and Caldwell, and I had my brother in my headset talking to him, and, man, I swear, that day was all about timing. My timing was perfect for a lot of stuff because I was at the corner of Cork and Caldwell, and I swear my higher power had me there for a reason because all of a sudden I went calling my brother, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh crap, what the hell? Head-on collision right in front of me. The truck hit a head-on, hit a car, and, luckily I was there, I was right front and center for it, so I got out my car, cleaned up the street, pulled my car to the side after the cops took their, report from the people in the accident. They walked up to me and asked me what happened, and I gave my report, my witness report of exactly everything that went down. So on the lady who took the turn was not in the right of way. She went straight through the light, and as soon as I got in my car, before I went up to cops, I looked straight up at the sky. I said, well, this is kind of cool. Well, this is the first day out of mine, and I get an experience like this. Thanks, man. All right. I gave my report, got my car, called Leo, like, sorry, man, I'll be on my way. She's like, oh, I got a jump. I was like, all right, cool, you got a jump. Good. Got my car, drove home, was on the phone with my wife, my headset, let her know what happened, and then I get to my house, I walk in my house, and boom, instant trigger. I was just like, my daughter, because they don't have a clean house, and it's real bad, and it really bothers me, but always, I can say if I'm blue in the face, preteens, teenagers, one ear and out the other. I walked in my house, my kitchen was destroyed. Oh man, I was getting so mad. I was just like, geez, I took this to help. The whole time I was gone, they never helped. So I started getting really frustrated. And I was like, I hear that little voice in my head, man, you need to calm down, you need to drink. I was like, no, I don't, brother, we don't need this. Like, I didn't even have 24 hours, you're going to seriously start already? Like, no. Called my mom, talked to my mom, but I needed someone to talk to. I didn't call my sponsor, but I knew he was at work. So, a little bit there, so I was like, I gotta call my sponsor, I gotta talk to him for a minute. And I called him up, he was at work, he's busy. But talked to me for a minute, when he got out of the house, we had a meeting, he needed to just get out. I'm like, I just did, I went to the store. But, it calmed me down a lot, it helped out a lot to have someone to talk to about this stuff. been nice to be home. It is a little different. Everything's all the same. Ever since I've been home, my boys have been up my butt the entire time. He hasn't left me alone. I got home. We're sitting on the couch that night. Last night, the night before, I looked over. I go, yeah, I'm home. He goes, yeah. Nobody go again? No. I go, what are you going to do if I leave again? And he must have said, just ran things with home in the bathroom. I was like, all right, that works for the rest of it. But no, it's been nice. I've had those little trigger urges, like just thinking I'd like to have, like thinking that little voice in the back of my head, like, you know, you have a dream. And I was like, no, I can't, dude. It's a waste of time. Like, you don't need this. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need this at all. My wife, I told her when I get out, you know, no more drinking in the house. Cause she drinks, but she doesn't drink like at all close to what I do. Like, we had to compare sizes. My drinking is like a giant. Hers is like tiny little mouse. Like, she barely drinks. And last night, she's like, man, I really like a drink because I told her about drinking in the house. I was like, you know what? It's not gonna be fair if I told friends when they go out and like, you guys can have a drink. I'll be cool with it. You know, I told her it wouldn't be fair. So I told her, like, you can have some drinks. I'm not gonna say anything about it, but I'm not gonna drink at all. It's not fair for me to tell my friends, you know, okay, you go out, you guys can have a drink. Mm-hmm. And then tell you that you can't have a drink at the house. That's not fair at all. So I was like, you know what? You can have some drink. You can drink if you want. So, she's like, are you sure? Yeah, I'm totally fine. I go, I don't even want to drink. I have no urge to drink at all. And, I don't want to. When I got home, shit, there was a couple of her little bottles sitting there. I looked at them and I giggled at them when I saw them. I'm like, my arsenosis, how you doing? So, it was kind of nice just to see them and to see what was there. But, yeah, it's just really nice to just be at home knowing that I'm taking this test every single day. Now I've got to pass this test every day. I was a horrible test taker in school, but now I'm in life, this is my new test, this is what I'm going to do. And as I've been out, I've helped a lot of people talking to them, and I helped some people out in Pine, and thinking about what I want to do with my life, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get back in school, and I'm going to become a counselor. I think I might be a drug and alcohol counselor, I just might be some kind of counselor, I want to do something better. I'm going to help people. You know, they say, but you enjoy doing what you're doing. You know, you're not going to work. So you're not working, you're doing what you love. And I love helping people. And they say, do what you want to do, not for the money. Do what you want to do, because you want to do it. And honestly, I love talking to people. I love hearing people's issues. I love doing whatever help I can offer them.
Yeah.
So, I want to start doing this and keep doing it. Because, you know, I want to be in your guys' positions. You know, I want to have those years under my belt. I want to do that stuff and just keep going with it. I want to prove to him that, you know, this is what I've done in the past is not what you need to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't need to be a drunk, you don't need to do anything. He used to see me before in my bad ways, but he was too young to know anything was there. My daughters, they're young teens, preteen, they've seen me at my worst.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you, Jim, I'm trying to, now that I'm back, you know, rechannel some stuff with my daughters. And show them that, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore because I had promised multiple times that I'll quit and I never did. And now this time I'm trying to keep that promise. I'm trying to stick to that honesty about it. And that's why I love this program. Because the honesty is the best policy of what I've always believed. I never truly lived it before this, but I'm trying to stick back to that now. You know, I got him right now and he's my little hellion. And he likes to pull a lot of crap on us, so. Trying to prove to him and show him that you don't need this no more. Yeah. And with that, I'll take another 24 days, sir.
Thanks, Christian. Yeah, I was there. The bike club has a ride on Fridays at noon, and we meet there at Mavericks. So we were all there in the parking lot and heard the collision before the brake squeal. You know, so they smacked.
Oh, so you were by there?
I was right there, yeah. Okay. We were just down by the Christmas tree lot. That's where we meet with the bike club. And it was loud, and yeah. And so I think one of the guys was immediately calling 911 on the club. So how about Jose?
Hi, I'm Jose, and I'm an astrophotic.
Hey, Jose.
Hey, Jose.
Well, I'm glad to be here tonight. you know, I couldn't be sober one day at a time for me because I also work in, I'm in a program, a special program. It's called conditional release program where I have to do their program and then do my program, which my program helps out the program. Because if I can't help myself, you know, you guys are my help. You know, I need you guys because you guys, you know, are a part of my help, you know, because if I don't come to meetings or even I was on Zoom for a while, but when they start opening live meetings, I started enjoying much more than Zoom. Some people like Zoom. I still do Zoom meetings, but I have to. But I like you know, live meetings because I like listening, learning. It reminds me a lot of where I come from, what I did, and what I'm doing now. So, you know, and one day maybe I get to share, you know, like you, Jim, you know, but for now, that's all I got there.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, there's 3 Daves here. Does anyone want to volunteer one of the 3 Daves or Davids?
Dave, I'm all like, hey Dave. Thank you, Jim, for your
thank
story.
You.
That shoot. I got something I'm kind of going through right now. Very cousin. He's like a little brother. He's like 6 months younger than me. We grew up together at the football games at school. We just grew up together. It's just like certain type brothers and stuff. And this morning I got a call from his older sister, my cousin too, who was like his sister, you know, with her. Yesterday, he jumped in front of a train out in the tracks, committed suicide.
Oh,
you know, last time I seen him with Weston, I was going to jail and going to get him out. We didn't really talk much then because, I mean, he was getting out. He decided to get out. And I was just going in. But that time was the first time we've seen each other in 15 years.
Mm.
You know, going separate ways in alcoholism and other addictions and stuff. I kind of zigged when she was back and we did the same thing. The closer when he was growing up, but just went in different directions as he got older. And, He just kept on zagging. You know, when I started to get my life right and straight. But, not once did I think about drinking or using it again, you know, going back to that life or anything. You know, I'm very grateful today for AA, my sponsor, going forward. You know, I just started my course that, more than a week or so ago, and, it's truly exciting to, figure out why I did the things I did, you know, and do, and the way I act. I never expected the steps to, like, make me realize my part in all these things, because in my alcoholism, it's everybody else's fault, you know. Everybody else's fault. It's not my fault for anything, you know what I mean? I drink, but it's everybody else's fault why I had so much turmoil and, wreckage and problems in my past. It's not me, it's everybody else. And so I started looking at the steps and I realized, you know, it's like, wow. And I'm just selfish, self-seeking, you know, dishonest. Me. You know, and I get to see those things today and realize my part in these things. You know, it's a beautiful process. I love it, you know. That's all I got.
Thanks, Dave.
Therese, you want to share online?
There I am. Okay, hi. I'm Therese Alcoholic.
Hi, Therese.
Hey, everybody. Everybody at the live meeting, everybody in Zoom. I just realized I thought I might get asked to share a little, but I'm looking around, and before the meeting, I asked Jimmy if it was a stag or a men's stag, and I don't know if I'm supposed to be here.
That's good.
Leah's back there.
Yeah, right? She's here. Yeah, she's back.
Oh, there are? Oh, okay. Yeah. I can't see. Yeah. I'm on my phone. And anyway, enough of that. Thank you for being there to the lady in the back. Anyway, it's funny. When Jimmy started sharing, it was kind of funny that my husband's in our back other side of the house, and he was on his meeting in Susanville where we live, but he was with his old buddies from Sacramento AA. So there were two meetings going on in this house tonight. But anyway, back to the share that my brother shared. My goodness, Jimmy, you told my story. It's so funny. We're only 13 months apart, and, you know, Jimmy and I are super, super close, always have been. But there were those teenagers where we weren't really, you know, you're not that tight with your little brother in high school, you know?
Yes.
And it wasn't until later on that, you know, his drinking elevated, my drinking was elevating at the same time. But we weren't running in the same circles at that time. And all this time that I was being 1,000% blackout major alcoholic, I didn't really keep tabs on my brother and know that he was doing the same damn thing.
Yeah.
So tonight, you know, every time I hear and share, which hasn't been that many times, I know and learn more and more about the little escapades that he got into. And I know that there's several that he hasn't known about me.
Yeah.
I just could relate to so much, Jimmy, because you told our growing up story, you know. I'm so glad that my calendar popped up on Google today and said, Jimmy sharing tonight. So here I am, you know, so many miles away and getting to listen to one of the best men and human beings that I know. And I think there's a lot of you there that could agree with me. I got sober a year after he did, and I definitely earned my seat in AA. I'm not sure anybody could say that they've taken out a culvert in an orange grove at 3 a.m. and that they've taken out, I don't know how many grape stands, plants, whatever, about 3 or 4 a.m. But the topper was when I landed about 300 feet in midair and landed in a foggy pile of manure, which once I came to, I heard moo, and I was in a Portuguese dairy in Tulare about 3 or 4 a.m. So, I blacked out and I continued to do terrible things, and, I thank God, my God, I thank God every day that I didn't kill anybody. I was a drinker that drove drunk. I had a bottle of something in between my legs when I drove my whole drinking career. Anyway, it's not about me, but I can tell you that I qualify, and that I know, by the way my brother spoke, that he helped many people tonight on Zoom, and I hope he helped any of you newcomers tonight. My goodness, the man that has 51 days, congratulations, keep coming back. You have, wants to be a drug and alcohol counselor. I mean, you've got dreams and goals. This is wonderful. And everyone else that spoke, I still learn something at every meeting I go to. And, I just can't say enough about my brother and that we're both in AA. My husband is in AA. And, it saved my life and it saved my families and just my son. I mean, making amends is just, who would have thought, you know? So busy pointing to everybody one time to think about me making an apology. But anyway, it's not about me tonight. It's about my brother's share, and it was absolutely wonderful, Jim, once again, and so full of heart and caring for others, and you're just generous, and you're just such a great human being today. But we do have one thing in common. I mean, we have a lot of things in common that I can't share, but we have one thing in common regarding our drinking career. I think we both were able to continue to work, and we were what you call alcoholics that would never miss a day of work, and we totally were dedicated employees. And I think that was, I never missed a day of work because I was hungover, and I were a lot of them. But I think that was one reason that denial ran so deep with me. How could I possibly be an alcoholic when I continued to pay my bills, have my cars, pay my house, home mortgage, and never miss a day of work and was a very good employee? It was impossible for me to get out of denial and try to say, I'm Therese, I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't believe it. It took everybody else in the room and their stories to make me realize that was me. So anyway, once again, thank you for allowing me to Zoom. And thanks, Jim, again. I love you. And thank you just so much for everything. It was a great, great meeting. I don't know how long it goes, but I'm still here.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, I think I had 1.3 years of sick leave when I retired. So,
how about Andrew, our visitor from Lamore?
Hey, I'm Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Andrew.
Thanks for sharing. It's funny. I'm like you in a lot of ways. But one of them is the very first time I got blackout drunk growing up was on white wine. I was like 13. I still remember that. I hadn't been able to drink that ever since. But I think that's one of the things that I think when I first got sober, I tried to get sober many, many times, but the first time I went to an AA meeting, I always tried to find how it was different from everyone else and how I didn't.
Right.
And then, you know, that norm of, you know, I always thought of alcohol as this one thing, and I was like always trying to not fit that. But the more times I've come in the rooms, the more times I've been here, the more I realize that we're all the same.
Yep.
And we all deal with the same issues. And, you know, hearing that at first was really scary. But now there's a lot of comfort that comes from that, of knowing that we all deal with the same thing. And hearing stories like yours where it's like you've been, you know, able to work the program and give it over to your higher power and see that, you know, that you can have a successful life once you realize that you're not in control and you accept that and you're willing to say that I'm powerless. It's really kind of a comforting thing, you know, especially for me. So I had about 2 years of sobriety before I went back out when I moved here. And then ended up getting into some trouble with the Navy, and they sent me to rehab. And it was super scary at first. It was like, kind of like you guys were saying, like, I've never missed a day of work. I've always worked really hard. I've always been very ambitious, always striving. And all of a sudden, like, well, if I'm doing okay at work, then who cares if I'm getting blackout drunk every night? Who cares if I'm doing all this other stuff? And I'm still showing up. But not realizing how much damage I'm doing to myself, to my relationships, to all these other people in my life. And then realizing, too, once that control, that idea of control was taken away from me, that's when I really got to be able to start living. And so it's really exciting to see just kind of hearing people like you where we can see that success. So I appreciate you sharing. Thanks for letting me here tonight.
Thank you. How about Santos online? Would you like to share? You're muted right now.
Hello?
There you go.
Oh, what's up, man? How you guys doing?
Great.
Oh, I thought you guys started at 8:30. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm court ordered to attend once a week. Yes, I am alcoholic. I caught my second DUI in May. I've been fighting it since then. I caught it in Hanford. I live in Visalia. And they tried to give me like 6 months in jail. I finally fled out to 90 days, we'll have time, and I got lucky. Thursday, I went to court with the mindset, having to turn myself in and do 90 days, we'll have time. I was bummed out because, you know, I was going to miss the holidays, and due to jail capacity, I was eligible for the monitor, and I'm ordered to attend AA once a week, so here I am. And I was actually visiting a friend in Hanford, and on the way home, my car just out of nowhere just gave out on me. I could not accelerate anymore, and I guess someone had, someone called the cops, because I was stuck on the side of the road. Called my girlfriend to come pick me up. I shared my location. And before she was able to come, here comes the CHP. And asked if I needed help, some alcohol on me, and you know how that goes. So here I am.
Welcome.
Thank you.
How's that?
Alright, are you done?
Yeah, because man, it's already my second DUI. Like, my first one, I did a 9-month DUI class. It took me like 14 months to accomplish. I had my license for like 3 weeks and I caught this one. Oh. Buzzer luck.
Thanks, Santos.
Okay, thank you.
See you guys every week.
All right. Leah, would you like to share?
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Leah.
I'm going to borrow something that she said. She said, always says that she tries to identify with the speaker, find something in common that they have in common. And the crazy thing is there's a couple things that I do have in common with you. You know, for one, it's your wife, my, as you know, it's good to be stuff. I watched my brother and his wife go through it with their son, and they were born, he had kidney problems, he bore three kidneys, and none of them worked functionally. One of them didn't work at all. The other one's, one-third, all the day, only worked one-third. The way he has, that's costly. He was like less than a year old. So their decisions are crazy. They paid for where they had family house, you know, up there for them, for the hotel expenses and stuff like that. It's not all the day. So, and I watched them struggle through all that, you know, and so, yeah, it's costly. That's costly. So I felt that, you know. It really hit home for me. Especially since, like, probably about 4 hours of time for that. That's the longest I have stayed sober, other than now. Because I was up there with him, and so up there. And another thing was you talked about appreciated. You know,
oh, thank you.
You know, I had the privilege of him being my sponsor for a little bit while I found myself having trouble finding a woman that I was, that's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sat in for a little bit, and he's a wonderful guy. And, you know,
spiritual giant.
Very, yeah. Very, yeah. Very, and the thing that man said to me. He's getting old,
yeah.
Like, cause he's very thorough, for one, and then he walked me back through one, two, and three, and, that we got to step three, which is a step on the game right now, I really didn't understand what it meant, you know. There are a lot of lives that we care about. That step is a very important step, and you know, you realize that the person I went to, I'm just like, yeah, of course, you know, just kind of skating through the kind of thing, and it's taken there too, you know, the decision, turn your will in your life, that decision, and you got to understand what it means to make that decision, you know, and he helped me do that. So that's kind of crazy. You know, I still talk to him today too, so he's a really good guy and a really important part of my life. I hold my ones close to me. That there's a few. There's one of them. You know, that loved me when I didn't love myself.
Yeah.
You know, and so I hold them very dearly. And they didn't let go. Bill, someone once said, "I got a hook in you. You ain't going nowhere." You know? That was the last month I had it. And I felt that only since then, hey, I relapsed and I have to announce it. It's usually going to go to Zoom and just like, you know, and what he told me after that, I had heard every day. He said, you know what? That's the glory of this program right here, you know? And he's like, shaving down the road and you climb up and you're yelling at him. And he thinking he's in trouble. But you're scared and you're yelling at him, you love him, you care for him, and you want him to stay with you.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I love you, and you care for you, you want you to be safe. You know, and that, I always remember it. I remember every day. I know that no matter what, no matter where I am, no matter what going on around me, there's somewhere, there's people who love me and care for me and want me to be safe, you know. And for me, I always had self-esteem issues, and I've always had a problem with being single, you know, and it was like, I never wanted to be alone at all,
you know.
I would even follow my brother and sister around the hood, I don't want to be home alone, you know, when my mom was at work or whatever, and so, but I feel like I need something, I think I can't maintain it. If I can come to a pick up drink or something, there's people there, you know, that glorious program. And over the last, 478 weeks, more than that, since August 6th, 2020, smallest ever place open.
Uh-huh.
And every day is a lesson.
Yeah.
And being a single woman is hard. But hey, I know I have the best co-parents in the world. You know what I mean? And I mean that. Because sometimes I'm like, yeah, thanks, you know?
Yeah.
I have kids, but I've never done it. Never done it for myself, never done it sober. So it's a different experience. But, and I have one of the best sponsors that I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
She is powerful, and she is just a blessing all the way around, and I'm very grateful to have her. Very grateful to be service, you know, there's two meetings that lift me up, great, but you know, one of the different things, that lift me up, huge heart memories, you know, and one of them was secretary of them, I had to call my home group, so I went to it, and I couldn't be more grateful for the people, for all the blessings that this program brought me. And Mary's shares, you know, I really connected with that. I felt it just the same. You've got a big heart.
Thank you.
You've got a big heart, and you can tell. And you grabbed my attention. And you opened my ears more wider than they are. And I've never been. I wanted to hear what you had to say, you know, thank you for that.
Thank you for sharing. You want time, or will we have
a little? We've got a few more minutes.
Okay, Dave G.
Dave, I'll call it.
Hey, David.
Thank you for your sharing, Jim.
You're welcome.
Yes, there are several parts of your story that I identify with. You mentioned being highly skilled in your music career. I programmed my first computer in 1979. and so I've been successful with computers.
Yeah.
And so that kind of gives me that whole self-esteem. Why not this? I got everything. I got this. And when I began my drinking career, I even thought to myself, well, if it becomes a problem, I'll just quit. Turned out later, I was able to just quit.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you've mentioned yet, you're the first time you had that six pack of beer and you pat yourself on the back every time you didn't drink it.
Oh yeah.
So my first run of sobriety, I had a two pack of Costco Winter Fresh mouthwash. So that stuff is 42 proof. Okay, 21.6, 43 proof, 21% just alcohol. And I thought, well, I'll just keep it there. That'll be a test, right? I was so good at this. I'm going to pass that test just fine, right? And then sure enough, later I had a weekend where, what the hell? And, yeah, so I relaxed on the 2016 Winter Fresh. Not the best day of my life. But everything about this share was not the best word. People use the word great way too carelessly. You found, well, you found love. I recently heard two different definitions of the word love. One was, if I love someone, I put their well-being above my own. And another one that's similar is the best of me supporting the best of you. Now, I don't know myself today. I'm still really quite selfish and self-centered. I still have an awful lot of... But in your share, I heard that you learned that love again. And... that's a wonderful thing. And thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
I hope to get there to that point for myself as well.
David, I'm Paul.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. How are we doing here?
Yeah, we're about out of time. The Valley Group, we've, yeah.